So is this...
I'd like to bring this hearing to order, please. And if we could all say the pledge, stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I just want to explain, this is my first hearing, so please bear with me. First hearing is chairman, woman, whatever.
Let's make it a memorable good one then, right?
Okay, so I'm supposed to read the warning. This hearing is October 20th at 7 o'clock p.m. here at the Fairhaven Municipal Building, 5 North Park Place, Fairhaven, Vermont, 05743. The purpose of this hearing is for the Zoning Board of Adjustment to conduct a hearing on an application filed for a conditional use permit to construct a single-family residential structure within the FEMA AE Special Flood Hazard Area SFHA. The property is a vacant lot, 0.17-acre parcel located at 14 Cottage Street, parcel ID 24-51-49. So the proceeding will be conducted in an orderly manner according to Robert's rules. And let's see. We will go over the disclosure of conflicts of interest and ex parte communications. We'll review the definition of interested persons according to 24 VSA. Subsection 4465, letter B. We will explain that pursuant to 24 VSA subsection 4471A, only an interested person who has participated in this proceeding may take any appeal of any decision. We'll ask all who believe they meet the definition of interested person to identify themselves and demonstrate why. And then the board will either grant or deny the interested person's status, subject to the definitions. Then we will direct the applicant, his or her representatives, and all interested persons to step forward and take the following oath. We will accept written information presented to the board. We'll invite the applicant or applicant's representative to present such application or proposal. We will then invite board members to ask questions. We will invite interested persons to present information regarding the application. We'll invite the applicant, his representative, or interested persons to respond to information presented. And then I will allow members of the public who are denied interested person status and other members of the public to make comments. And we will allow final comments or questions from the applicant or applicant's representatives. Upon the motion and majority approval, that we shall either adjourn the hearing to a time certain or close the proceedings by stating that this is the final public hearing on the matter. Upon final adjournment, the board will be deemed to be in deliberative session until the written decision is issued. I believe we were going to try to fit both of the applications in together, and then the board is going to go into deliberation. That way you guys can get out of here.
Yep.
If that is okay with everybody. All right. So, let me go back to the beginning. I am supposed to request the disclosure of conflicts of interest and ex parte communications for the first one, which is for 14 Cottage Street. Did I get that right?
That being the 1.7 acre lot?
Yes.
Did you say 1.7?
No, 0.7.
0.17.
Okay.
Does anybody have a conflict of interest?
Just wanted to give you that kitchen need to excuse me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Phil.
How would you know until you know what's proposed?
Yeah, yeah. We don't know what's
you
going
have to propose. You've read all the information. None of us are privy to it. You would have to propose, show
I
us
think
us.
It means. I think it means the people on the board.
The conflict of interest is regarding the board members.
Thank you.
Neighbors, business people, it might be
will be later.
Yeah.
Okay. So, now I'm going to go over the definition of interested persons in 24 BSA subsection 4465B. Definition of an interested person under 24 BSA subsection 4465B includes the following. Give me a second. One, a person owning title to property or a municipality or solid waste management district empowered to condemn it or an interest in it affected by a bylaw who alleges that the bylaw imposes on the property unreasonable or inappropriate restrictions of present or potential use under the particular circumstances of the case. Number two, which one was that? Yeah, okay. The municipality that has a plan or a bylaw at issue in an appeal brought under this chapter or any municipality that adjoins that municipality. Number three, a person owning or occupying property in the immediate neighborhood of a property that is the subject of any decision or act who can demonstrate a physical or environmental impact on the person's interest under the criteria reviewed and who alleges that the decision or act, if confirmed, will violate the municipal plan or bylaw. Number four, any 10 persons who may be any combination of municipal residents, voters, or real property owners within the municipality who, by signed petition to the appropriate municipal panel, allege that the relief requested, if granted, will violate the municipal plan or bylaw. This petition must designate one person to serve as the representative of all the petitioners regarding or matters related to the appeal. Number five, any department and administrative subdivision of this state owning property or any interest in property within the municipality and the Vermont Agency of Commerce and Community Development. Okay, so pursuant to 24 VSA subsection 4471A, only an interested person who has participated in this proceeding may take an appeal of any decision issued in this proceeding. So if the zoning board has made a decision and you disagree with it, you can appeal that, but only if you've been designated as an interested person and have attended this meeting. Okay, so if you believe that you are meeting the definition of an interested person, please, one by one, identify yourself and demonstrate why you feel you qualify for an interested person status, and to provide the contact information. We'll start here.
Okay. My name is Jeff Baiazuzzi. I'm a zoning administrator in some other towns, and I've been a developer for 25 years. I'm here at the request of my client, the property owner. And everybody can call me Jeff B or just Jeff. Thank you.
Okay. You're you. You're the applicant.
Okay, I thought you were going around that way. Randy Bishop. I own the property next door.
Okay.
So that makes me interested.
Yes. I'm trying to envision it. Okay.
Oh, we're Brian and Carrie Jennings. We own the property right across the street.
We're at 15 Cottage Street.
Okay.
Right across the street.
Did you get all that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no, I know who lives there.
Randy, you're 1 Maple Street? Is that
yes.
Your address?
I'm Jared, by the way.
Right.
That is me, Jeff.
Okay. So the board may grant or deny interested person status subject to the definitions. I think, does anybody on the board have any issues with those folks being considered interested parties?
No.
Okay. Okay, so now I have to ask you all, so the applicant, and his representative, and all interested persons to please step forward, and you can just stand up, I guess, and take the following oath. Please repeat after me. I hereby swear, that the evidence I give, in the cause under consideration, shall be the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, So help me God. Okay, thank you. All right. Does anybody have any written information to present to the board? Okay.
Jeff did provide.
Yeah. Jeff had provided the board with this very nicely done diagram.
Well, thank you. That's what we're approving. But it's just a correction. There was a typo or two on it, and so I caught it.
Oh, in the application itself?
You already have the version in the application.
Okay.
So it's
all right.
And I'd just like to, I supplied the board with the email from Kyle Medash, the state floodplain manager, so I'd just like that noted that that was submitted, and the applicant's representative has received a copy of that by email in the past.
Okay.
I have a question. Does the board have any information to provide us so that we can see likenesses, images, elevations, site plans, exterior structures, parking areas, all those things?
Are we allowed to do that?
I suppose the applicant can give any information about the project that is not readily available in the application itself.
Okay.
So any details that there's questions about it, I would say.
All the elevations and everything are on there. It's basically, I mean, I'll supply all the pictures of what it is for the design and stuff. It's pretty simple design.
Is it stick built? Is it a kit? Is it an Amish house?
It's either gonna be stick built, the same size, or it's gonna be a modular coming through Bill Lake Modular Homes. It just depends about efficiency, but it's still gonna be the same concept. Siding, whether it's vinyl siding, and it'll look like your picture, kind of, but the underneath will be steel beams. And I want to do like a metal fence railing or something in there because of the floodplain and the floodgates. And I mean, we've done them like that one in Ludlow, and it's just, yeah, I agree, it's ugly. So I don't want it to look like that. I want it to look like a custom cabin, tiny home type deal. I mean, it's gonna look nice, and I'll supply pictures and whatever. But you know, I want to do my part fixing the town up.
And it's a conforming structure, not a non-conforming structure?
It's conforming.
With your porches and steps and stuff like that and everything?
Excuse me, guys. We're not at that part yet.
Okay, oh wait, I just don't know. You know how it's your first time?
It's my first time, so just bear with me. But there's a part in here where the interested parties, but it's not yet,
cool.
can ask questions. So
of course,
it's not yet. Right now, we're supposed to be, the people on the board are supposed to be asking questions of the applicant or representative.
Okay, may I, Madam Chair?
You may.
Okay. How about if I present an introduction and go over the information that you have, and I think it would be helpful to the folks in the meeting?
That sounds like an excellent idea, okay. Jeff. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So folks that don't have the application, I'm sorry for that I didn't bring more copies, but we can provide them, and I might have a copy here left over that I can pass around. So this is basically an application. We're going to talk about 14 Cottage Street. 14 Cottage Street is in the FEMA Special Flood Hazard Area, which is used to be called the 100-year floodplain. That's no longer the politically correct term, but the result is the same. It goes underwater on occasion. So to do that, you have to raise the elevation of the building's lowest point by 1 foot above base flood elevation. Base flood elevation in that location, and we're working from the highest point on the lot, which is the southern end of the lot, about the lower third of the lot that runs as a rectangle north and south. So the base flood elevation for that location, as determined by FEMA and the floodplain manager, is 300 and, I'm going to go to my notes, I'm more familiar with them, 364 feet. The base flood elevation is 369.5 feet. That's, and you can ask the river how it knows how to read these things, but that's the elevation where the water will come over the lot. The elevation of the lot is 364 feet. It's 5 feet approximately lower than base flood elevation now. And so you have to raise the lowest point of the building up by at least 1 foot in Fairhaven above that base flood elevation. So that means it's going to be up in the air. Now, originally the building was going to be a smaller building with 400 to 800 square feet, and there was a note that Phil mentioned in your package that it was going to be more of a tiny house. I think that for the cost of this project to justify it, it has to be a little larger project, maybe a two-bedroom structure. The plan is to connect to municipal sewer and water, which was there at one time, but apparently there's no allocations and so on, so we've applied through the town manager to address that. So we're going to actually end up, and here's where that schematic that you have in color on your table comes into play. You're going to end up at least 7 feet above the natural grade to meet that base flood elevation requirements. It's going to be up in the air. It's going to be like the second story of a typical two-story house. The property owner, I don't think has finalized his designs yet. If you have, then you can certainly jump in on this. But there's two things you can do when the elevation of that building is up that high. You can enclose underneath and use it for storage. It's not allowed to be used for living space. But you can store your mechanicals under that. They have to be elevated. Or you can use it for parking or something of that nature. And if you enclose it, then you have to provide for the water to be able to flow through that space in a flood. Trip gates are a pretty common thing. I think a screened enclosure, because it's just going to be parking, that is up off the ground level enough to just have free flow water go under it is another thing. The important thing is that the living area is going to be up to a prescribed level, and the notes from the floodplain manager have dictated what those elevations are. Yes. So there's going to have to be some real engineering involved in this, and we'll have to hire a surveyor to set a base flood elevation and then set the preferred minimum elevation above base flood elevation at the lowest point in the building to be. But we're going to use the bottom of the framing. Which
Mark Cursell's already actually done.
Yeah, okay, good. So Mark, you all know Mark Cursell, he's a local surveyor. So that said, then how do you get the building up there? And so whether you use steel reinforced concrete piers or I-beams or something of that nature for vertical elevation, and then you'll have to provide horizontal elevation. It's going to be a little bit of a skyscraper thing to get a building on top of that. If you use a modular, it's a one-day thing to set a building on top of that.
Otherwise, it's you know, it's standard build a platform, build the walls, and so on and so forth with a stick build. The size of the building was undetermined in the application, so what you'll see I've done in the application when it comes to the site plan is I've identified the building envelope. So if you go to the page that shows the site plan in the middle of your package, and I don't know if you have color copies or not. No?
I think I have a copy of that.
Okay. So basically we've brought in
Jeff, can you show me which one you're looking at? Is it this one?
Yeah, it's that one.
But, okay. You guys look through your packet here.
Okay. So it's the schematic that shows the tax map, and it shows the aerial photograph, and then it shows the proposed locations for the driveway and the structure.
No. Hold on a second there, Jeff. We've got to get everybody on the same page.
Yeah, I don't have one.
Well, it's in your package.
You might be going through the wrong one.
It's in your application package.
14 Cottage Street, not...
Okay, so for the board's benefit here... Okay. You folks are all close. You can share. This is...
Yeah, I have that one.
Okay, do you have the color?
That's the one?
No.
It's in there somewhere. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm gonna give you a color copy here, which will make a public copy, which is gonna make interpretation.
Oh, here it is.
A lot easier. Any color? Great.
Are you okay?
You do have it. Okay, great. I'll pass this one around to the audience.
Okay.
And
I screamed.
I have the original.
All right, so we'll either share or we'll
use the application. This is the application.
Yeah, that's just a rough copy of everything.
That's what you're looking for.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is everybody good?
Let's see if I have a couple extra kicking around.
Yep, you got it. All right.
No, those are my answers.
Jim, you're all set?
I think so.
And you're all set.
So, could be able to explain that then.
I'm
going to need one of those at some point, which is my original. So, these are not a computer. So.
Yeah. You know, so I mean, I when I first bought it, before you owned it, there was pins all in there. The things changed a little bit. And there was a foundation that was completely right where that house is. Just
right,
nasty.
I can tell it's sinking.
Yeah, it's nasty.
I've been putting dirt in there for years.
It's a nasty old building.
All right, so on your site plan, you'll see in red dashed lines, that is the building envelope. The red dashed lines are brought inside the property boundaries, which are the black or green lines, the prescribed distances per the zoning regulations.
Yeah, rats are terrible. Terrible.
So what we have here is a location of the driveway, which is approximately the driveway location as far as 14 Cottage Street, as best I can tell. And more importantly, we have an envelope that's described as 28 by 30. That'll be the maximum building size, as far as I know. It's because the final prints had not been decided when we made the application some 75 days ago. And we're still undecided as what the size of the building will be. But it will fit inside that building envelope.
I can see that.
There is room to make it longer going north and south, but the idea is to make it compact and space efficient.
Where were you, excuse me, honey, where were you proposing? You'd mentioned a driveway?
Okay, so you'll see it labeled as a driveway just to the left of the, just to the right of the building envelope, of the building.
Right there?
You can see it really good on this one.
Yeah. 16 feet.
That's straight in the middle of the building area.
Down by your thumb.
Not very thumb.
Oh, okay.
Helps when it's in color, isn't it?
I was looking at the picture.
Yeah.
I was looking at the picture, not the diagram.
Okay. The square footage of the... But you don't have the square footage.
We don't have it finalized yet. So
you have a range, though?
Yeah, that's the range. 30 by 28.
30 by 28.
I mean, did you want to make it longer than 28?
Oh.
30? Longer than 30?
No. No, okay. I don't. I mean, there's
a reason for 30. And that is you could put, if you use modular construction, you could put two modules on one tractor trailer. Anything longer than that, you're going to have to add to the trucking cost significantly.
So I know a lot of them, that's one tech.
I mean, I want to build something that gives the wow factor. I mean, you know, it's not putting, I want to make it look sharp. You know, it's going to be a rental, you know.
So it can be open, and then what you'd have to do is insulate the underside of the deck. Just as a point, if I may, there isn't an architectural review in your zoning regulations. So it could be a building of straw. There's nothing to say that the board would like that. But and it's not going to be that. But it is, you don't have architectural review. So whether it's wood-sided or vinyl-sided or purple,
it can be 20.
Excuse me one second, Jeff. Guys?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I'm used to getting yelled at. I'm sorry.
I
have a hard time hearing.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, go ahead, Jeff.
So to summarize, we have a site plan that I believe is compliant to the zoning regulations, where the building envelope is where we're going to do it. And as it turns out, the infrastructure, the sewer and water coming off the mains on Cottage Street are about in that location. So if you can conceptualize this building up in the air, 7 feet above the concrete slab, and then whether it's enclosed or enwrapped underneath that or not, or open, could be disguised by landscaping or vegetative landscaping. But it'll provide some storage underneath. The staircase I propose would be coming in from under the building up into the structure, but it doesn't have to be. What we do know is one of the points that the floodplain manager made is that it needs to be what I call a breakaway staircase. So if flooding and flood debris come down through under the building and takes out the staircase, it isn't going to impact the principal structure.
Right.
So that's just an engineering thing, or actually a structural thing. And relatively easy to satisfy. The floodplain rules also require all mechanicals be sheathed and elevated. And what we're going to do is use heat pumps. So there won't be any underground or above ground fuel storage. And all the pipes will be encased in PVC, probably strapped to a column until it gets into the principal building, and then everything will be inside the principal building after that. So,
question. Yep. What keeps the water from freezing?
They're going to use staff to insulated pipes, either heat tap rake or something of that nature. I mean, that's one of those engineering things. But it's not a new concept to do that.
No, I've seen heated columns.
Yeah.
I think if anybody's been from Bridgewater, you see a lot of houses next to the river that are elevated in that manner.
Yeah, this gentleman mentioned Oceanside locations, which is, mm-hmm. This has been going on for 100 years, elevating them now. So yeah, we've... there's a good example.
That's one I was looking at in Cape Cod in the...
So what they used is a side by, what they did there for screening is they used a board on board type of fencing around the lower level, which would allow water to pass under it and pass through the slats. And the whole idea is to try to relieve the hydraulic pressure against the structure.
They're also a breakaway too.
And I would share the breakaway. If a tree trunk is coming down the stream, I'll bet it'll break away. So or an ocean. So that's the concept in general. I mean, like Jared said, he wants it to be in keeping with the neighborhood in terms of architectural style, so it would be some kind of a pitched roof, probably, and with those doors. There wasn't any proposal for decks, but if it's inside that building envelope or as an accessory to the principal building, that could be added on to the application, maybe. Right now, that's not in the plan. So,
Jeff, quick question. What's the difference between what you said was 7 foot elevation versus the entire 16 and a half?
Okay, so 16 and a half is from the top of the footing to the bottom of the frame structure, all right? My note originally said 16 and a half was top of the piers to bottom of the native grade. What did I have there? You have the correct note. The black and white one.
16 and a half.
It had a typo error in it.
Yeah, all I see is 0.5.
16.5 feet. Just to be, what it's intended to inform you is at the bottom edge of the structure to the top of the footing. Now the footing is 4 feet down in below grade. All right. So the estimated, and we've actually provided a 2 foot clearance above base flood elevation, and that's for a margin for error. Now that we've got a surveyor and valve, we can hit it right on the head with 1 foot. But I've never been able to figure out how rivers know how to stay below base flood, or you know, at base flood, or whatever.
Can I get a last order?
Itself, right.
The house, and up towards the school.
Yeah.
Right.
Gentleman had a rowboat taking up his grandchildren out of there with a flood lapping the top of the floorboards of the porch, and the lights were on, and the service was in the cellar.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that they don't want you to do anymore, and it's been a rule for a very long time, quite honestly. Your floodplain regulations are really kind of dated. A lot of towns that I've come across, they are, just because it's not something people focus on usually.
So you'll see 7 feet of the pier coming out of the ground.
Yeah, it could be, it'll be a 7 feet, give or take, one foot. And then the meter station and all of that is going to have to be above base flood elevation, but it'll be off the building. The meters, they read electronically anyway.
Just a drive-by.
Right. So it'll basically be an all-electric house. So they have an electric heat pump for hot water, and they'll have electric heat pumps for heating and cooling.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's, so it's buried into the ground, like that's 4 feet, that's the footing of the actual pier.
So simple is good. By the way, these aren't just nailed to the, you know, the floor deck isn't going to just be nailed to the foundation systems. They have to be bolted and strapped, you know, floodplain rules. So.
I got another question, Jeff. So Kyle Madash, he mentioned that the stairs must be anchored with posts to prevent the stairs from damaging the main structure if the stairs were to experience the force of high water.
Yeah.
So you're saying what you want to do is make it the opposite, right?
No, I'm saying they have to be anchored. Because there's going to be, if it's a light flood, there's going to be some resistance to stairs. Yeah. They don't want the stairs breaking away and going downstream.
Right.
But if there's enough pressure that the stairs are going to break, we don't want it pulling on the main structure. So the stairs at the top are going to have some movement built into them.
So, but maybe I'm not getting it, because I thought what he's saying is that the stairs are almost have to be part of the structure in the sense of with the hydraulic pressure.
I'll check that's with the floodplain manager to see if he's got some design ideas. I'm sure that he's got the FEMA books.
I mean, it makes sense, so it doesn't take the whole structure.
Well, the idea is they don't want flotsam and jetsam going down the stream as a result of
this. They don't want stairs going, so they want it all anchored and secured. So that's just the only contradiction to what you've been going through so far to what the floodplain manager.
No, they're not designed to break away and flow downstream. They're just designed to break away if there's that kind of pressure on them and they are anchored. Mm-hmm. Maybe the anchoring is enough to keep them from just, you know, pulling at the building. I don't know. But I'll check on that. And for what it's worth, I've never done a Quinoite one. Not quite like this. So.
Would it be a problem to the applicant if, you know, there was some type of mandate that said the stairs have to be anchored in a way to prevent damaging the main structure, that
whatever I have to do to appease everybody, I'm good with.
So I got to commend, I guess, you for doing a checklist, and that was my intention here, is once we get the concept past you know, a considered and approved, then the details, and the details would be to pull those line items off of the floodplain managers and make those a checklist for, you have certificate of occupancy in there.
Yes.
Yeah. So for your certificate of occupancy. None of these things that Mr. Kyle Medash has suggested are new to me, and they're not really onerous. I mean, they add cost to construction, but especially the elevation part. On the other hand, it utilizes a vacant lot.
Do the interested parties need to now see any kind of diagrams or anything? I didn't mean that.
No, you're fine.
But like everything he explained, you, I don't know if you have a picture of it in your head or not, or if you have the map to actually go along with it, with the diagram on it.
That's just basic. That's just basic floor structure. It doesn't show what the building's going to look like.
Right.
But there's no like what the siding's going to be.
Yep.
The roofing's going to be like all that. So I mean, it'd be nice to see that.
No.
Are you prior to it? Yeah. You know what I mean? Usually when you suggest things like that, there's an elevation. There's some sort of drawing, show siding, layouts, things like that.
I don't know if our zoning actually like can make a stipulation, at least in as far as our bylaws go. Certainly as an interested party, you know, like your concerns are your concerns, and that's definitely justified. But I don't think I didn't see anything in our zoning bylaws that would stipulate one way or another, like siding or anything like that.
Yes, I'm used to like the HDC in Nantucket and other places like that. Go move a window 3 inches, you need a drawing.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, there's, like, you know exactly what the building looks like. Like, you know how you guys are like trying, like, do you think you guys all have the same picture in your head? I don't think so. They show you so you know what it is.
Yeah.
That's all I was curious about.
Yeah.
Is if there was a rendering or not.
You're going to have vinyl siding on that, Mr. Ellis?
Not sure.
It's probably going to be a wood siding. You know what I mean? Like, if everything works out the way I planned, because I've owned this property for forever, I've paid taxes on it forever, and I've fought to get to this point. I just want to put something there. Like, right? Like, I own a lot of property in Fairhaven. I pay a lot of taxes. I do everything I'm supposed to do. I'm here. Like, I just want to put something up nice. I drive by that going to the grade school every single time, and it drives me crazy. Growing up as a kid, it was a dump. Everybody that lives here knows that. And like, you know, we're fixing up these houses one by one. Randy's done a beautiful job. My neighbors to the back have done a beautiful job. Like, you know, and I've been looking at that lot. So like, if I got to do something to make everybody happy, I'm good with that.
Some other notes I have, and I can't remember if Jeff, either if it was on the application or maybe it was in one of your emails, like your original email to Kyle way back when, but I'm just going to read this, and if you could tell me if it's still accurate. Plumbing will include backflow preventers, exterior wiring will be sheathed in continuous PVC from below grade into the finished living area. Overhead secondary electric service to a meter entrance will be above BFE, which you said, heat pumps.
The entrance, I'm not sure. I meant to look before I came here, but I was running late. The two ways of getting power to that structure is either from a nearby pole with a transformer to the gable end peak and use a mast, or run it underground. And the first one is less expensive and certainly probably less prone to flooding, but the second one is the option is to run it into Schedule 80 and you know, electrical PVC, and run it vertically and strap it to one of the girders and vertical piers, and it's bulletproof at that point. So
is that about what I read? Is that accurate?
Yeah, the only thing I left out in my presentation was the backflow preventer.
Okay.
So, I mean, one of the things that we could do is, and I actually thought you kind of came on that. I didn't think to do it before my ride over here tonight. But for all of these are the bullet points that the floodplain manager sent. And he's been over. This is, I think, his third round with this piece of property with various property owners. Phil can tell you how long he's been trying to get this off of this checklist. And Kyle Nedash is a great guy, 30-something. Who lives in Brandon, who's now in charge of three counties as the floodplain manager. And that's a huge task, especially like a town like Brandon, which floods every time it rains. The highlights are what we would follow as a checklist, basically.
Did you, it says owner applicants are to conduct their own research with a Vermont licensed engineer and obtain Vermont A&R floodplain manager review, so that would
that's
your...
Well, that part's been done. The manager has reviewed this.
Yep.
Gotcha. There's a current review from the floodplain manager, and it's based on current floodplain rules, which haven't really changed in Fairhaven much. So.
Okay. And then the licensed engineer, is that?
Well, a surveyor will do the elevations.
And actually, Mark's already done that, or?
Mark's already done the elevations. It's marked on the telephone pole.
Okay.
Well, that makes it easy for these guys. Once they have a benchmark, they can take and shoot with their own levels and the elevations. The bottom line is when there's a finished grade, it's going to be up to the bottom of the bottom of the structure. By the way, when they mention in the rules of top, when they mention, it's, I don't know how they do this, but when they talk about the lowest living floor, the lowest floor living area, they're not talking about the bottom of the floor, which would be the underside of 2x10s, for example. They're talking about the finished floor deck, which makes no sense to me. That leaves all the insulation in the cavity and everything else vulnerable.
So,
this design brings it above that level. But that's how the floodplain rules
write.
The floodplain rules are on the top of the framing, not the bottom of the framing. So I don't get it.
Roseanne, do you mind if I just read a couple bullet points from the floodplain manager regarding this? So this is from Kyle Madash. I think Jeff has a lot of things highlighted already that he's going to use as a checklist for what needs to be completed. But I'll just read some of this out loud. It's not much at all. But ensure that the lowest horizontal portion, which is the bottom floor joist, is elevated at least 1 foot above base flood elevation, which he has down as 370.6 feet or higher. So does that jive with what you're saying?
Right. He's using the elevation of 369.5 feet,
yep.
And he's adding 1 foot to that. Our schematic adds another foot to up to that.
Yep.
That's the minimum level.
We talked about the stair must be anchored with posts to keep from damaging the main structure if the stairs or experience the force of high water. Underground plumbing or utility connections to the structure must be protected from water intrusion and attached to structural elements such as piers for protection from flood water. Is there anything you want to comment?
It's every connection down there.
Okay. Utilities are elevated to the lowest floor or above, or provide details on project components below lowest floor. I think you said it's going to be above base flood elevation. And then the last point was, given that the ground elevations shown on the plan included with this application are approximated based on LIDAR 1 foot contour information,
right,
and do not represent an official licensed survey, the applicant would need to confirm the critical structure elevations via survey to the nearest tenth of a foot. FEMA publishes base flood elevations in the flood insurance study to the nearest 10 foot. Therefore, you need structure elevations to the nearest 10 foot for a direct comparison to ensure that 1 foot above base flood elevation requirement is met to satisfy the town's permit and recording requirements under Section 8 of our bylaws there.
So,
talk about the
that's where the licensed surveyor comes in. By the way, it also behooves the property owner to do that. I mean, all of these elements here cost money, but it's the right way to do it, just from maintaining a building that's going to not go downstream and avoiding flood insurance. Because once it's elevated, he'll not have to pay that with flood insurance. He can if he wants, but he doesn't have to. So.
Excuse me. So, Jeff, is the plan to get the supports up and do an elevation check before the actual first floor is?
It's a multiple type of check visit thing.
It's on the pole. You can't
well,
miss it.
I think Phil's point is right. It's on the pole, but it's up to the surveyor to certify this. So he's going to have to come and check. When you get an elevation on your post, when you get your vertical support structure up, and before you cut them to the final point, you want the surveyor to certify that that's in the clear.
And that's the plan, if I understand correctly.
Is an engineer still needed, though, or just the surveyor?
And surveyor. Mention
of an engineer.
Well, it probably came out of a manual. It's not necessary. It's not the Empire State Building here. So
that's all I had.
John?
I've already gone through all this before.
Second time's easier? I guess, my question.
It's not quite as interesting, but it is easier.
Okay. Good.
Interested people? Any other questions? Any further questions?
I have a question of, I don't know if it's about this or not, but I mean, whether it's an eyesore or not when I look at my picture window, you know, that's one thing. But my biggest concern is who's going to be living there. We've lived at 15 Carter Street for over 20 years. We've dealt with the drug house that caught on fire and the needles all over the place. That's our biggest concern.
I promise you there will be none of that. I own 20 properties. They're all rentals. I own 3 houses in Granville. I kicked out 15 heroin addicts, needles, so I know all about it. Like, I mean, if anybody knows me and where I'm from and what I do, it'll be clean, nice living. It'll be a brand new house that I put $100,000 into, and I promise you it won't be an eyesore. And if you look at any of my properties, you can see it.
I appreciate, you know, the fact of you.
Yeah, not just I mean,
that property you're talking about is getting cleaned up.
I mean, that
yeah,
property
that
there.
Yeah, that whole area, the Maple Street, seems like it's slowly starting to clean up, and, you know, it's just...
Slowly but surely.
I mean, I'm also the health officer, so I know what's going on.
Yeah, so, you know.
No, we
will. Always say we live on the other side of the gutter, so...
Well,
so we'd just like to continue that we
yeah,
can get some good people.
And
here.
I 1,000%, and I understand, like, you know, but like I'm putting that up, and then the next permit is that's what I want to put up. So we're not just talking $100,000; we're talking $170,000 that I'm putting into Fairhaven, into the floodplain, into something that is
on one street.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like, so I know what the houses cost down there, and I know what they were, I know what they've been. Like, yeah, so I just, you know, like, again, it's just, yeah, it makes it so tough working in these towns sometimes with this stuff. Like, right, like, we're in a housing crunch. We need housing. We need taxpayers. We need people spending money in our towns. Like, I've lived here my whole life. I've watched this town go down, right?
We're coming back up.
We are coming back up. I bought property in Granville. I want to buy more houses over there. They love me. They will do anything for me. And I got pictures and I could show you. Like, this is a process that I gotta tell you, my anxiety level is through the roof because I've been shot down and told no so many times. And so now I hired Jeff, right? And I'm thousands of dollars into it. Thousands. I'm just cleaning the place up. Look, I had to spend $5,000 to do that.
Jared.
Yes, ma'am.
What? I was just wondering. I mean, there's a river going through Granville too. Have you done anything like this in
Would
Granville?
You like to see a picture of what Granville
looks like? I would
really
like to see a picture.
Like,
I would like I think other people would like to see
New
pictures
York Inspector.
Too.
Well, so I have a tiny house down there on the river, and I'm in the floodplain on both sides, so they let me put a tiny house on one side, and then I can put this on the backside for glamping. So I'm right on the Metowee River, right? Like, so
a
great
spot, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like, and we're getting permits for that to go down there.
Good fishing there, too.
Yeah, it's...
Well, where is this on the Metowee?
That's right on, that's 84 East Main Street, Granville. So I own 3 places down there, and again, they were terrible, 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 and like...
So this is, like, what you're going to do...
No, this is what I want to do in the floodplain, and I'm not saying this is the exact one, but this is what I want to do. And
no, the tiny house in Granville is showing you is nothing like what we're talking
that's
about.
That's what I want to put down there on the other piece of property.
Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
We are getting ahead of ourselves, but like,
that's a tree house.
Jared, are you doing short term or long term?
Oh my, I do short term and long term. I mean, I'd love to do long term, and I'm in through the state programs. I've been granted Neighbor
Works.
The next
one is?
I mean,
just wait till
end. Yeah. I mean, I'm in all the programs, and like, you know, like, I got Section 8 people, I got veterans. I mean, we own more property that we just bought in Fairhaven that we're trying to get permits for.
So basically, that second picture you showed me is kind of what you're thinking of doing, but on stilts.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean
not on this property,
Not on the one under consideration. We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit.
That's whole entirely different, though.
That is an entirely different project. You thought the first conversation was interesting. Wait till we go to that application.
Your point is well taken, though, about, you know, the last thing you want when your neighbor sells a house or somebody's building on a parcel, the last thing you want is, you know, you don't know who's moving in, and the last thing you want is more trash in your neighborhood.
And the last two tenants that were in the White House were god-awful.
Yeah, and our Airbnbs were five-star. So, I mean, you can go right on our Airbnbs, you can look at them, you can look at our places, you can see, and we have a spotless record.
So is that what that's going to be on Maple Street?
No.
No, that's just going to be a regular rental.
Yes, right now, yes. But, like, I'm not positive. It depends what I can do with the rest of my property. Because I own a whole bunch more. That goes right through Fairhaven and right up to Castleton. Right? So, like, I mean, like, I spent a lot of money on land.
So, his application, this is...
Maple Street.
Well, I'm just saying that's what it looks like, not any of his...
Right.
You know, yeah, it'll be a ranch-style home.
It'll be, well, he showed me for a frame...
With skirting.
With
apparently skirting's back in the picture.
And I want some nice railing, whether it's welded railing and it's nice and I got lights and it's beams and like, so I'm not going to devalue that. I mean, I'm going to bring people's property value up. There's no question about it.
Railing where, sure? In between the posts?
In between the posts. Between. So you're going to have six posts. I mean, basically, guys, and I mean, here's my house up here, right? And you're gonna have piers. I mean, I got a picture of a house I just jacked up. We jack houses, we move houses.
This is a good picture.
I mean, that is, you know, and whether I have stone veneer on it. Like, I want it to fit in. I don't want it to look like it's an eyesore, absolutely. And I don't want it to look like it don't belong.
Well, it won't be marketable if it doesn't.
Yeah, right. Right.
It's not in your best interest.
Right. No, absolutely. And I mean, I wanted to give it the wow factor. Like, you know, like, wow, look at that. Like somebody, you know. And I mean, I can.
You want to raise your stars?
Yeah, I just, you know, like it's just, oh, I've been paying taxes on this for so long.
I picked up some of his jacks on the side of the road, but I'm not doing it.
John. Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you.
I have a question for Phil. Phil, the New York side of it where he does, he hit in Granville, is that harder, the rules and all that compared to Vermont?
I cannot say. I don't know the New York, but I can
tell you. To be honest, I brought the New York inspector, Danielle Drinkwine. We deal with her all the time, and I was a little shocked because as long as one of my tiny homes is on wheels, it's parked right there, but as long as it's on wheels, I don't need a permit to do anything. You know, so like I was like, okay, so now we're in the process of getting permits to put up two more houses down there, right? Like, so like, you know, I mean,
in Granville.
On wheels?
Give you this houses, answer houses. If I can. Our flood hazard area regulations, when it came time to update them, the Planning Commission at that time approved the minimum requirements that would be allowed to get away with FEMA.
Right.
So our requirements haven't changed, and they've been at a minimum with our flood hazard regulations, and haven't been pushed to higher limits the whole time I've been in office.
Do you know what the town's ERAF rating is?
No, I do not.
Okay. FEMA has been on a tear here about improving the flood hazard regulations all through Vermont, every town. And this is kind of off the sidebar, but towns that have had relatively simple floodplain regulations are getting lower ratings than towns that have gone in lockstep with what the state wants, and that includes river corridors and things like that. So river corridors limit development, not only where the river is, but where the river might go in an inundation. And so if you're a riverside town and you have today marketable real estate, developable real estate, and river corridor regulation comes in, it may negatively impact the developable real estate. But the state wants that because it provides a greater degree of security to the town. And how they get what the state is doing to get towns to consider this is they'll give you a higher ERAF rating. What's an ERAF rating? It's an acronym for emergency management, whatever, emergency rating, whatever. They give you more money than a town that has a lower ERAF rating. The maximum is the maximum the town pays is the maximum the town has to pay might be 12.5%. And if you have a low rating with the state, the maximum you might have to pay is 17.5%. Well, when you have $1 million road damage, that's a big number.
Not only that, this property here, like we get the okay for this, how many more properties do we have sitting in the floodplain?
Right.
Makes it much more appealing to somebody like myself that can buy properties, fix them up, make them look good, and how about the ugly eyesore we have right on the corner? You want to talk about ugly? That's sitting there, right? Like, those are properties we want. But if we got to go through this, that's been sitting there empty for how long? Like, I have 20 people that work for me. I want to fix up my town. I want to do my part. And I've been doing it in other towns. And again, this is the town I'm from. My whole life.
Okay. We're almost there, guys. I'm going on to the second page. In fact, well, everybody here has been interested person. Just as an aside, please make sure Jen has your address, your contact information.
There's a sign-in list.
Yeah.
I have sorry, address.
Randy.
Mm-hmm. Randy. Make sure she. Okay.
She does.
Okay. All right. So, do either of you guys have any questions for us?
Time frame.
One of the reasons that it was extended out was because we were waiting back to hear back from the state, because we just didn't feel that if we didn't have, we could say, oh, hey, no problem, and the state could come in and
right.
say,
no. Yeah.
No, you can't do it.
Right.
So we waited to hear back from the state, and he was delayed.
He's been busy.
So I'm sorry for the
yeah, no, we're good.
Delay, and but that's why it was extended.
Well, I will say, it doesn't. I understand that the board has, every town is different in terms of how they meet, and I've worked for towns where they use their maximum 60 days before they schedule the hearing, and they use their maximum 45 days before they render a written decision. And that doesn't do anything to the contractors who are waiting to make a living and provide housing. So
we also were in the midst of, we lost two members of the zoning board, so we were having issues.
Well, it's nice to see a full board. I see a lot of boards.
Your decision letter will be done very rapidly.
Okay, that's great.
That's what you're
perfect. That's yeah.
And of course, we haven't decided.
Yeah, right. Whether it's yay or nay.
It'll be done. Yeah. It'll be done.
That's right.
Timely manner.
And that's what Jared's talking about.
Not like I think we have by statute
45 days.
I thought it was
45 days after the close of testimony.
It will be much sooner than that.
Okay.
I know you're on a roll there. I just found developmental standards in Appendix B that I wanted to make them aware of as well. Something I think we need to talk to. Are you good with that? We talked about zoning doesn't really say what your exterior construction could be. You could be at a straw. However, the Appendix B does give some stipulations for like floodway. That's not a floodway though. So never mind that.
Now, floodway rules are much stricter.
In residential development, new construction, existing buildings, be substantial. We already covered that. Hold on a second here. I guess No, that's for non-residential development. No, so we. Sorry, we.
Yeah, no. Your conditional use standards, which are typical for most towns.
Yeah.
I looked at them, or we wouldn't have been here if I thought they didn't pass.
Yeah. You know? No, I just want to make sure that, just for the record, that as a zoning board, we're going through each thing that we're required to go through.
Yeah. And that's a good practice, so. I'd say. So, yes, sir.
So yeah, no, that was everything.
Okay, so, gentlemen of the board, do any of you believe that we will need to? Let's see, adjourn this hearing to another time to finish it, or do you think that we can close our proceedings tonight?
Does that have to be a motion? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion
to close the proceeding for tonight.
I second.
All in favor? Or any discussion? Excuse me. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
This hearing is closed. I love doing that. I have so much fun.
I saw that right there. You went to like Judge Judy at
I do. I watch religiously.
At least there wasn't any hurl on the
helicopter.
I heard that.
That's pretty good. He has a color printer. I can send him. You have a color printer, right? That I can send you.
I can send it to somebody else. I do not have access to
it. Scans in color.
We're afraid you'll make money.
That's all right. You can see how important the color machine is.
And don't get spicy. Folks, don't ruin your patience over what's going on.
My biggest concern was having riffraff down. There's enough water.
I got six.
I was just going to say, guys, if anybody needs to. And we only go to the gentleman's room.
Sir?
Ross Roberts, Lexi Ellis, that's my father. So we go ahead.
I am stopping recording for a second.
Don't lose faith down there. It will get cleaned up.
Oh, he's got to be.
Yeah.